Philippines records its first local cases of the COVID-19 Delta variant. Meanwhile, the health department assuring the public the country can manage a possible surge in Delta variant infections. Indonesia records a new coronavirus daily case tally and is still expecting the numbers to rise. And the ruling PDP Laban Party expected to elect a new set of officers this Saturday. That assembly being challenged by the party's executive vice chairman, Senator Coco Pimentel, whom we will speak to later on in the program. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with this piece of breaking news. The Philippines records its first local cases of the more transmissible COVID-19 Delta variant, including a cluster of infections. We'll get details on that later from our correspondent, Katrina Domingo. Prior to the health department's announcement, though, it assured the public the country is capable of handling a possible Delta variant outbreak similar to the one ravaging neighboring Indonesia. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergeres says local government units are being advised as early as now to add beds for COVID cases.
Kakayanin natin. Sa ngayon po, ang estado natin, kapag ka dumating tayo ulit dun sa 10,000 na peak ng kaso ng March and April, base sa mga improvements natin, kakayanin. Pero kapag lumaki pa dyan, kakayanin pa rin natin. Kapag tumataas na mga kaso, huwag mo nang antayin na nandun ka na sa peak ng pagtaas tsaka ka nag-expand na mga kama. So amin na pong binigyan ng advice at guidance ang ating local governments that they should already add extra beds.
But for the Private Hospitals Association of the Philippines, the healthcare system of the country might collapse should daily cases balloon to around 50,000, just like in Indonesia.
Actually, ngayon ang mga private hospitals, nandun na po kami ngayon sa 20% allocation ng ano ng COVID beds, ano. Mm-hmm. At doon po sa allocation na yun, medyo hirap pa rin kami dahil sa kakulangan po ng ating mga nurses, no. Mm-hmm. Eh pag naging 30% po yan, talagang mahihirapan. Wala tayong manpower sa mga mm-hmm. private hospitals para mag-manage nitong mga kung magkakaroon tayo ng surge na ganun kadami. I'm not sure kung talagang totoo yung sinasabi ng right now ng government hospitals na prepared na sila for this kahit 50,000, medyo mabigat po yun.
Metro Manila remains under general community quarantine until the end of the month. The country's COVID-19 task force also placed Baguio City, Cavite, Rizal, Quezon, Cotabato, and Surigao del Sur under GCQ. Cagayan, Laguna, Antique, and Davao City are also under GCQ, but with heightened restrictions. Meanwhile, Bataan, Iloilo Province, Davao de Oro, Davao del Norte, and Butuan City will be under the stricter modified enhanced community quarantine. The rest of the Philippines will be under modified GCQ. Government has been wary of easing restrictions amid the threat posed by the more transmissible Delta variant.
Matuto na tayo dun sa nangyari noong Abril at noong Marso. Ngayon, mas careful opening or careful easing po tayo. Very cautious easing, if I may say.
The updated restrictions come as the Philippines logs over 5,200 new COVID-19 cases Thursday. 82 new fatalities were also recorded, raising the death toll to over 26,300. Over in Indonesia, the country is preparing for a further spike in COVID-19 cases due to the Delta variant. The Southeast Asian country logged another record high of nearly 57,000 new infections Thursday. This brings its total to more than 2.7 million. A senior minister says Indonesia is already dealing with a worst-case scenario, but he still expects daily cases to climb. The world's fourth most populous country is struggling to slow transmission, even after imposing its toughest mobility curbs yet. Indonesia's immunization rate remains low, with just 5.8% of its 270 million people fully vaccinated. The Australian state of Victoria has been put under a five-day lockdown as authorities there race to contain an outbreak. Meanwhile, the now three-week lockdown in Sydney has somehow abated the spike in infections. We have more in this report.
Sydney residents woke to some good news on Thursday. COVID-19 cases slowed down after days of rising numbers. But it is still not enough to lift the lockdown, warned New South Wales State Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
Whilst the case numbers are bouncing around, we are seeing a stabilisation. They are not growing exponentially.
But she also warned that infections could rise again due to the growing number of people with the Delta strain moving around in the community, particularly in Sydney's southwest. Two deaths have been reported out of the city, the first for the country this year. Meanwhile, Victorian state capital Melbourne is preparing to follow Sydney into a lockdown after a team of furniture movers travelled from New South Wales through the state of Victoria while infectious. Just over 12% of Australia's adult population of around 20.5 million have been fully vaccinated. Officials have pointed to changing medical advice for vaccines and supply shortages for its sluggish inoculation drive.
The British looking ahead to their so-called Freedom Day as England lifts its COVID-19 restrictions. But for the clinically vulnerable, the move is too early and risky.
Freedom Day is drawing near, but excitement at the end of restrictions in England has been marred by rising cases and downright fear among the vulnerable, like Luke Peters, an author with cystic fibrosis who has had a double lung transplant. Monday, July 19th, when the last remaining business is open, will be more of an anxiety day, he says.
We want to live, we want to, you know, do stuff as a family. And so it's really important to us that we know what we can do, what we, you know, should be doing, what we can do safely, and conversely, what we shouldn't be doing and what we shouldn't be considering doing. But that's all we're going to be left up to me and, you know, how risk-averse or otherwise I am, because there's no other hard and fast guidance out there. And that feels wrong and it feels irresponsible.
Two-thirds of adults in Britain have received two doses of vaccine. Prime Minister Boris Johnson says summer, when schools shut and pressures on the health service are lower, is the best time to reopen, though with caution. But with the more infectious Delta variant gaining ground, his health minister says cases could hit 100,000 a day. More than 1,000 scientists have signed a letter to a leading medical journal to condemn the opening as unscientific and unethical. This is Stephen Griffin of the University of Leeds Medical School.
I signed up to the Lancet letter because I believe that allowing infections to run amok in the country is a dangerous mistake. I don't believe that our vaccines are at a sufficient level yet to allow this to happen safely, and that we should not underestimate the damage that can ensue with high case prevalence in the country.
The changes leave much to personal choice. Two-thirds of people in Britain want at least some restrictions to remain in place, one survey showed on Thursday. Many hope local rules might have an impact. Masks will remain obligatory on London transport, for example. But University College London professor Christina Pagel says hospital admissions, currently at 500 a day, are on course to triple or quadruple to as much as 2,000.
Now, that isn't as bad as it was in January, which was 4,000 admissions, and it's not as bad as it was in the first peak, which was 3,000 admissions a day. But I don't think that should be the benchmark. You know, going to the very worst thing that happened and pretty much brought our health system to its knees does not seem to me to be the benchmark of if it's less than that, it's okay.
Critics say the strategy will not only cause deaths, but also debilitating long COVID in many. Peters fears that for the clinically vulnerable, it will become near impossible to go to crowded places.
It really does feel that since shielding came to an end officially, a couple of months ago, it, it really does feel that those in the clinically extremely vulnerable group have been largely forgotten about.
Some believe public anxiety about Freedom Day may be England's best hope of avoiding worst-case scenarios.
The World Health Organization urging China to be more cooperative in the probe into the origins of COVID-19 as it demands access to more raw data. Here's the full story.
We are asking actually China to be transparent, open, and cooperate.
The head of the World Health Organization on Thursday said that investigations into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic in China were being hampered by the lack of raw data on the first days of spread there, and urged the country to be more transparent. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus also said there was a premature push to ignore the theory that the virus may have escaped from a Wuhan laboratory.
There was a premature push to, especially reduce one of the options, like the lab theory. As you know, I was a lab technician myself. I'm an immunologist, and I have worked in the lab. And lab accidents happen. It's common. I have seen it happening. And I myself had errors, so it can happen, and we need information, direct information, on what the situation of these labs was before and at the start of the pandemic.
A joint report in March by a WHO-led team that spent 4 weeks in and around Wuhan with Chinese researchers said that the virus had probably been transmitted from bats to humans through another animal. It said that the laboratory leak theory was extremely unlikely, but other countries, including the United States and some scientists, have not been satisfied with that conclusion. China has called the lab leak theory absurd and said repeatedly that politicizing the issue will hinder investigations.
I think we owe it to the millions who suffered and to the millions who died really to understand what happened. And I hope there will be better cooperation.
Tedros will brief the WHO's 194 member states on Friday regarding a proposed second phase of study to research the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic.
The Philippines updates its list of so-called green countries. Fully vaccinated travelers coming from these nations are allowed to undergo a shorter 7-day facility-based quarantine. Most of these countries are considered low risk for COVID-19. Some areas from the previous list were removed, but Australia, which is battling a surge in infections due to the Delta variant, was still included. Classes for the new school year set to open on September 13. The date of the school year opening was approved by President Rodrigo Duterte. The Education Department says it will release the complete school calendar soon. The pandemic forced basic education schools to shift to online learning. Duterte withdrew his decision to approve a pilot run of limited face-to-face classes late last year due to concerns over new COVID-19 variants. The Subic Bay Freeport no longer requiring confirmatory swab tests from tourists who are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. But Wilma Esma, the chairperson of the Subic Bay Metropolitan Authority, says visitors, especially senior citizens, should keep their vaccination cards with them at all times.
If you look like you're a senior citizen, you will probably ask more often. When you go to a grocery, when you go to a store, you'll probably ask more often to show your vaccination card because the senior citizens are more vulnerable. When you check in a hotel and you're staying 4 days and above, And they will probably they will ask for your vaccination cards. Mm-hmm. It's really a layer of protection for us more than anything.
At least 4 million Filipinos now fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That's as the government receives more vaccine supplies to boost its inoculation drive. The ABS-CBN Investigative and Research Group says the number of fully inoculated individuals accounts for 7% of government's 58 million people target by year end. All in all, the Philippines has administered over 14 million coronavirus vaccine doses. The United States begins shipping 3.2 million doses of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine to the Philippines. Unlike the jabs of other brands, J&J's one-shot vaccine only requires regular refrigeration, making it potentially easier to distribute. But it does carry a warning on its fact sheet, with data suggesting an increased risk for an autoimmune disorder. The first batch of 1.6 million doses are scheduled to arrive today and the rest on Saturday. The U.S. donated vaccines are part of the Biden administration's support for COVAX. That's a global vaccine sharing program. Malaysia will stop administering Sinovac's COVID-19 vaccine once supplies run out. Malaysia's health ministry says it has a sufficient number of other vaccines for its program, which will be anchored on Pfizer shots. The announcement to stop using Sinovac's jabs comes amid increasing concern over its efficacy against more contagious variants. Thailand this week said it would use the AstraZeneca vaccine as a second dose for those who received the Sinovac shot. Indonesia, on the other hand, is considering a booster shot for those who received the Sinovac jabs. The COVID-19 pandemic is also giving rise to outbreaks of other fatal diseases like measles and polio. That's because millions of children around the world are missing their routine vaccinations. More in this report.
Almost 23 million children missed out on routine vaccinations last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. That's the highest number in over a decade, UN agencies said on Thursday. It's fueling outbreaks of preventable diseases like measles, polio and many more. Here's UNICEF's immunization chief, Ephrem Lamango.
This latest data show an alarming increase in the number of children who did not receive any vaccines at all, which we call them zero-dose children, putting fate of millions of young lives in the balance. Most of these children that missed their first dose of vaccine live in communities affected by conflicts and crises, live in communities that are underserved, remote rural places, and they live in informal slum settings, particularly in urban poor areas.
Measles is one of the world's most contagious diseases. It can be fatal in children under five. The World Health Organization say it's especially risky in African and Asian countries with weak health systems. Polio can cripple a child for life. The WHO and the UN said in an annual report that the gap in global vaccination coverage has set up a perfect storm, meaning children are left more vulnerable to infection just as countries begin to ease their COVID restrictions. 10 countries account for the majority of the 22.7 million children left unvaccinated or undervaccinated against diphtheria, tetanus and pertussis in 2020. That's 3.7 million more than in 2019 and the most since 2009. The report added that 66 countries postponed at least one vaccine campaign against preventable diseases. Some are now running catch-up programs. India, Nigeria, Afghanistan, Mali, Somalia and Yemen are among the countries most affected by the vaccine backslide. The WHO has urged countries not to lift public health and social distancing measures prematurely as they begin to emerge from the health crisis.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, we'll talk with BDP Laban Executive Vice Chairman Senator Coco Pimentel about issues hounding the country's ruling party. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. Back. We're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippines records its first local cases of the COVID-19 Delta variant. Meanwhile, the health department assuring the public the country can manage a possible surge in Delta variant infections. Indonesia hits a new record high of COVID-19 daily cases and is still expecting the numbers to rise. And the ruling PDP Laban Party expected to elect a new set of officers this Saturday. Back with more news, the health department is still investigating whether there was local transmission in the 16 new cases of the Delta variant it has detected. Let's get more details now from our correspondent, Katrina Domingo. Kat, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. That's right. The Department of Health has confirmed the detection of 16 new Delta variant cases in the Philippines. Of these cases, 5 were returning overseas Filipino workers. 1 arrived in the Philippines from the United Kingdom on April 26 and has been tagged as a recovered patient. Another 2 of these cases arrived in the Philippines from Qatar on June 15 and have also recovered, while the DOH is still tracing the point of origin of 2 other OFWs who tested positive for the COVID-19 Delta variant. Now, as for the local cases, there are 11 carriers of the Delta variant in the country. 6 of these carriers are from Northern Mindanao, 2 are from the National Capital Region, another 2 from Western Visayas, and there is a lone patient from the Central Luzon. Of these 16 patients, Carmina, 1 died while 15 others recovered. The DOH says, as you mentioned, it is still investigating if the local cases have already led to local transmission. Now, to clarify to our viewers, the term local transmission is used if there is evidence that a local case, meaning a person who has no history of recent travel abroad, has already transmitted the virus to another local case. So far, the DOH says the appearance of these Delta variant cases are sporadic in some areas, and they still have to get sufficient proof to show that there is already local transmission of the Delta variant in the Philippines. Now, just to give context to our discussion, Carmina, the Delta variant, which was first detected in India, is more contagious than the original COVID-19 strain due to the presence of the L452R mutation, which allows the virus to get past the immune system and spread faster in cells. Now, the DOH has instructed affected local government units to improve their contact tracing efforts and to do a so-called backtracing among Delta variant carriers. Backtracing means that contact tracers have to trace up to the 3rd generation of contacts to see which patients or which people are really infected with these more contagious variants. Now, while existing COVID-19 vaccines, Carmina, could not fully protect individuals from the Delta variant, the DOH says the jab still provides protection to avoid developing severe cases of COVID-19. Dr. Edsel Salvania notes that while the mutation of spike proteins in the virus tend to decrease the efficacy of COVID-19 jabs, he says that the vaccines are still effective against these variants, or at least decreases the potential, the possibility of a patient to develop a severe case of COVID-19, as these vaccines still have the so-called cytotoxic T cells, a component of the vaccine which could still protect the body from further infection. Now, Carmina, we tried to ask the DOH on whether or not the Delta variant carriers in the country were already inoculated with COVID-19 vaccines, but they have yet to clarify or answer that question. But so far, Vaccines Dr. Carlito Galvez says that the national government will reallocate more vaccines to the region where the Delta variant was detected, particularly in northern Mindanao. Now, aside from these 16 new Delta variant carriers, the Philippines earlier recorded 19 other Delta variant carriers in the country. The Philippines has already issued a travel ban against Indonesia, where some 54,000 people contract COVID-19 daily due to this Delta variant. Carmina.
All right, Kat. Just I know you're on a break right now. The press conference will continue. But when you do get the chance, can you also ask them to clarify if it was sporadic in some areas, what could be the possible reasons behind this as they begin to trace if there was indeed local, if there is indeed already local transmission? Can you do that for us, Kat? We would greatly appreciate it.
Of course, Fermina, we definitely will.
Okay, thanks a lot, Kat. Take care and keep safe. Right, back to the news. Around 1.15 million doses of AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccines for the Philippines' private sector have arrived in the country. Our correspondent Jervis Manaha now joins us with details. Jervis, go ahead.
Carmina, a new batch of 1.5 million doses of AstraZeneca vaccines has arrived in the country earlier today. The China Airlines flight carrying the vaccines has landed here at the NAIA Terminal 1 at past 10. These vaccines were procured by the private sector through the tripartite agreement with the government and the manufacturer late last year. Employees of over 500 companies will be benefiting from this shipment. The vaccine purchase was negotiated through the Dose of Hope program initiated by the Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship, Secretary Joey Concepcion. Secretary Concepcion said part of the shipment will be donated to the LGUs, but he did not specify the percentage of allotment. This is just the first batch because 17 million doses of AstraZeneca was purchased through this agreement, and all these will be delivered in tranches in the coming months. Vaccines Czar Secretary Carlito Galvez says the country is in a better position now that we are working to have a 10 million buffer dosage of vaccines to ensure that no vaccine shortage will happen again. Health Secretary Francisco Duque said we are nearing our target of inoculating 500,000 people daily. Once and if ever this happens, we can achieve herd immunity in 130 days. Duque says he cannot assure that we won't follow the trend in ASEAN as many of our neighboring countries like Indonesia are experiencing a surge in COVID cases. But he said we are ready if ever that happens. Vaccine Czar Carlito Galvez also said they are considering vaccinating children and will do so once their panel of experts recommend it. This afternoon, the country will receive its first batch of J&J vaccines, and more than a million Sinovac vaccines is also scheduled to arrive tomorrow. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Jervis Manahan. They're joining us live. Take care, Jervis. Keep safe. Moving on, Philippine Senator Manny Pacquiao files a resolution seeking a probe into the allegedly anomalous distribution of government's financial aid amid the pandemic. Pacquiao says the Social Welfare and Development Department engaged e-payments firm StarPay to give social amelioration funds worth 14 billion pesos to 1.8 million beneficiaries. But according to Pacquiao, only 500,000 were able to download the StarPay app. He says around 1.3 million people did not receive the 10.4 billion pesos in financial aid allotted for them. The senator says despite this, the DSWD's records show all 1.8 million beneficiaries received their payments. The allegedly missing pandemic funds are part of Pacquiao's claims of worsening corruption under the Duterte administration. The DSWD denies the allegation. It says it is ready to face any probe. The rift within the ruling PDP-Laban party continues ahead of next year's presidential elections. On Saturday, the faction led by expelled party vice chairman, Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi, will hold a general assembly where they are expected to elect a new set of officers. Let's get the reaction of the party's executive vice chairman now, Senator Coco Pimentel. Senator, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Magandang hapon, Carmina, and to all of your viewers and listeners.
All right. So there's going to be an election come Saturday. First of all, people are calling this already the implosion of PDP-Laban. What would you call it?
There's just a, what's this, a friction among members. We will still try to save the party, but the bottom line is if we need to part ways, we should part as friends. Kasi ano lang naman ito, ano ba ang bottom line? Ako ha, ang feeling ko ha. It's a struggle within the party or intramurals on the possible presidential nominee of the party in 2022. Hmm. Ang contention ko at saka ng mga some of the long-time party members, we choose an existing party mate. If someone is willing to run with a credible chance of success and a track record that you can present to the people, yun. That's a common sense stand of a loyal party member. My problem is I have been talking to Secretary Cusi and he cannot explain to me why he is reorganizing the party. For what purpose? Yeah, if it's connected with the 2022 presidential elections, who do they have in mind? And, I mean, dapat, diba, if he was impelled to move quickly to reorganize, therefore, I'm sure he has somebody in mind. Hindi naman niya sinishare kasi in our past meetings. Kaya umabot kami sa ganito.
Pero kayo, Senator, it's very clear to you that it's going to be Senator Manny Pacquiao.
Once he declares, walang pilitan sa election eh. It must be the voluntary personal decision of the person that he wants to run for a certain position. Ganun dapat. Okay. Mm-hmm. But now we should entertain, di ba? We should entertain because makikita mo naman sa pronouncements niya, sa kilos niya that he may be interested. So we are entertaining. So mag-ready kami. Eh, meron din nagre-ready. Pero para kanino? Hindi yun ang, yun lang yung tanong eh. Basic tanong naman yun among party mates. Dapat masagot yun kahit in confidence.
So when you talk to Secretary Cusi and when you ask him, sino ba tong napupusuan ninyo? Bakit hindi niya po sinasabi?
Hindi nga klaro, kaya nga umabot kami sa ganito. Hindi nga klaro eh. Is it an outsider? Is it going to be a party mate? And then all the more muddled and made unclear by their unauthorized meeting last May 31 where the participants adopted a resolution urging President Duterte to run for vice president and for him to name the presidential candidate of the party. Di lalong naitago. Lalong natago ngayon yung identity. So, hindi. I think that is not the correct approach. That's not the correct steps that a party which is planning to participate in an upcoming election should do. Dapat step by step ang ano mo, ang planning and moves mo. Hindi yung you keep things secret up to when? Diba? Up to when? October filing and then November is deadline for substitution. So sana kahit na in confidence, sana na-reveal yun. Sana pinag-usapan na namin. Diba? Kasi, okay, if sabihin niya sa akin, if this did not happen, but let's just sabihin niya sa akin, ang gusto, may faction tayo o may grupo within the party which wants to support someone from outside the party.
Yeah.
Then we will now start debating, justify why. Yeah. Why choose an outsider when we have someone that we can credibly present to the people? So justify. Ganon sana. But we never reached that stage, Carmina, because that was never divulged.
We're going to get to that later, having an outsider run as your standard bearer. But first, I want to get really what your opinion is. Give it to us straight, Senator Coco. Do you believe that it is right for President Duterte to run as VP?
Again, I'll go back to my position. That is his personal decision. If he wants to run for vice president upon the urging of... but this idea kasi did not come from him. I believe it came from Secretary Cusi. So, and then, because he is a party mate, we should entertain his desire to run for vice president. So, hindi pa naman express yan eh. We should not immediately dismiss party mates' intentions, political intentions. Then, i-discuss dapat ganun to be fair to everybody.
Pero tama ho ba yun? Illegal, but...
Actually, ang better tanungin yung person involved, di ba? Kasi what would be his justification? But since you mentioned legal, one thing going for the proposal is that we cannot point to a sentence or a provision in the Constitution which prohibits it. Diba? That's it. Going for that proposal. But then, sometimes you have to read the Constitution as a whole, in totality, and then somehow feel what is the spirit behind the provisions in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So that's the counter-argument. But as a party man, and there is a party mate which expresses a desire to run, it must be entertained, not immediately dismissed. Dapat ganun.
Okay, let's focus on having an outsider as the party standard bearer. Is it you already said that this would cause problems because it would make it difficult to hold them accountable to party principles.
Correct.
Wasn't that exactly what you did when you took in candidate Duterte as your standard bearer in the 2016 election, Senator?
Well, then Mayor Duterte was already a member of the PDP Laban way back in 1980s, 1990s. Hindi pa yata siya mayor. I think he was then vice mayor in the 80s. So we have pictures and documentation. And he has always been supportive of the party, the PDP Laban, and the candidates of PDP Laban. So we counted him as one of us. Actually, so maybe formally or informally. And then, di ba, he went around expressly supporting the call for the change in the system of government to federalism. So how can I say that he is not if he is not a formal party mate, but at least he is a soulmate as far as federalism is concerned.
Oh, baka ganun din ang ibalik nila sa inyo yung rason nyo. It's not expressly, you know, whoever they choose as an outsider, whether they choose an outsider.
We will never be able to settle this issue unless the identity is revealed, hindi ba? You have to reveal the identity because we look at the past of this person. So pagdating kay Mayor Duterte, iba yun. Iba ang past niya sa PDP Laban. We have pictures of him taking his oath of membership for the party. Very, very, very distinctive yung ano namin eh. We will know if it's an oath for PDP Laban because we raise our left hand, not the right hand.
Okay. You also said that PDP Laban was built on ideology and its principles and not by numbers. And this whole thing that is happening right now would sort of pave the way for you to revisit the past, revisit your principles, your ideology. But then one would have to ask you, Senator, where were these principles and where was the ideology when you took in Mayor Duterte as your standard bearer in the 2016 elections?
Federalism, we were together. Enlightened nationalism, we are together. Belief in the supreme being, he stated that. He believes in a supreme being. He allowed us to run the party in the consultative way. Siguro doon lang kami sa humanism ang ibang interpretation because as the president says, some are focusing on human rights and he focuses on human lives, which he can also justify as a part of humanism. So ano po yun? That's that may be subject to debate, but at least his way of thinking can fall under the five basic principles of the party and the basic objective of federalism. Hindi lang namin nakamit. But the advocacy is there. Carmina, I mean federalism is difficult to achieve because you need to amend the constitution. Hindi po ganyan kadali yan. It's really a struggle. And I saw it firsthand. Importante yung solidarity, the feeling of solidarity that the Filipino should feel that if he is from Northern Luzon, that the one from Southern Mindanao is his or her brother or sister. Mm-hmm. Na concerned ka dapat sa quality of life, the quality of life that you enjoy in your place, you also want to see others to enjoy. That's the, yun, medyo kailangan pa natin to build up on that concept of solidarity.
Senator, what do you say to the observation that what is happening to the party right now can all be traced back to you? For two reasons. Number one, you had taken him in, a virtual outsider, as your candidate in the 2016 elections. And number two, it all started to happen when you relinquished your position to Senator Manny Pacquiao. And that's when the cracks began to show, Senator.
No, why are we making President Duterte the issue? We all campaigned for him in 2015, 2016, and we won. But that was for the term 2016 to 2022. Kaya sinasabi ko nga sa party mates ko, we are now preparing for 2022 to 2028. So let us not go back as if this were 2015 or 2016. So, I mean, iklaro natin yun. The friction now ongoing is actually because of the moves of Secretary Cusi. He wants to reorganize the party. And he told me about it. So, and then we talk, hang up, for what purpose? So ganun sana. But, our talks did not reveal the real motivation behind the actions.
Mm-hmm.
We should prepare for 2022. Okay, yun, agree ako dun as a party man. But we should develop a party member if someone is interested. And there is someone interested. So we develop him. Ganun yun. Yeah. That's very logical, very basic.
So let's turn our sights on Senator Manny Pacquiao now. He didn't run under PDP, right?
He ran under UNA.
Correct.
Right.
But now you relinquished your post to him.
I stepped aside, and then the constitution must take over, and there's an automatic succession. And Senator Manny Pacquiao was the EVP. We call our vice president EVP. So ganun, so umakyat siya.
And so would you also describe the party's relationship with Senator Manny Pacquiao the way you described your relationship with then Mayor Duterte as he's a soulmate?
Senator Manny Pacquiao is a legitimate member of the party. He joined us way before 2015, but because there was also a little friction in the party, some members went to form UNA, and Senator Pacquiao got his CONA under UNA. But that is already water under the bridge. You know, he came back to the party. We made him the campaign manager of the Senate slate last 2019. So pati yung help to the party, contribution to the party, nandun. So everything is there. So I do not know why they're making it an issue that he ran under UNA, because my point now is the candidate for 2022 must come from the party. So he is now part of the party. So you do not research his past and then come up with the reason that he ran 10 years ago under another party. That is not the issue. Ang issue ngayon in 2022, if the person is a member of the party, yun po yun. I mean, para klaro lang, kasi masyado nang ginugulo yung issues
Opo nga, ginugulo. Pero kailangan pong tanungin, halimbawa in the course of our conversation, it seems to me that you're sparing the president, that you are just focusing on Secretary Alfonso Cusi and his allies. But there are those who have said that had it not been for the instruction of the president to call for that assembly to nominate him or to at least urge him to run for VP, then this friction would not have happened as well, because that pointed back to the president.
Well, marami kasing facts na hindi nyo alam eh. For example,
dapat hindi nyo po sabihin.
Okay, okay, for example, when you prepare for a meeting, you don't prepare it one day, di ba? You prepare it months ahead, di ba? Or weeks ahead. Hmm. And then that's May 31. Yung recognition ni President Duterte sa efforts ni Secretary Cusi was dated either May 30 or May 31. So he was not a party to acts, to the preparatory acts done by Secretary Cusi weeks before the meeting. So we do not I do not blame him. So the meetings, the autonomous or independent action lacking coordination within the party is the responsibility of Secretary Cusi. So yun, that is very clear. And then for those who are siding with Secretary Cusi, I do not blame them. But the point is national headquarters will not recognize the unauthorized meeting as well as all the decisions made during unauthorized meetings. That is the stand of the national headquarters.
Would you call the actions of Secretary Cusi a betrayal?
Well, we will know when he reveals all his cards. I'm just disappointed that, you know, when we had our meeting sana, when we could have revealed our cards so that we can plan properly the future of the party, he should have done that. So now that they're holding these meetings, very public meetings where they're announcing their intentions, tignan na po natin what would be the final result in these unauthorized meetings, because that's the way they want to announce their intentions. Sana it should have been done in a private meeting among party mates.
Hmm. And yet you said a while ago that if there's going to be a parting of ways, then let it be a parting of ways between friends. Do you think this is still salvageable, considering that they are going to push through with a Saturday meet?
Yeah, but we still do not know what they will be formally adopting in their unauthorized meeting. So wag na natin pangunahan. But of course, sana masave. Okay, sana masave ang personal relationships. Kasi you know, may mga personal relationships din kami. I have led the party for so long. I have dealt with these people for so long. We have personal relationships. We save that if possible. The political relationship we try to save, but if we cannot save, let us part as friends naman. I mean, anong ugat nito? Anong ugat? Iba ang napupusuan nila for president. Iba ang napupusuan namin for president. Tignan mo ako, I'm not having disagreements with the leaders of the other parties who have other bets, hindi ba? Kasi I will not interfere with their plans. Kasi ganun yun. So, and then we will just see each other during the election. We will promote our candidate and may the best candidate win. Dapat ganun ang ating, attitude.
Yeah, that's good if that happens. But then at the end of the day, the name of the party is in the middle of this all. Who will have the right to use the party's name? And how far are you willing to go to defend your right to use the name of PDP Laban?
The national headquarters and the official hierarchy of the party will continue to act and move as if nothing happened, that no unauthorized meetings will affect the actions and decisions of the HQ. Kasi number one, we consider them unauthorized. No matter how formally you adopt a resolution or a decision, that should not be made part of the records of the party. So we will continue.
Yeah.
With our actions, our motions, our decisions as the PDP Laban.
Yeah, but they're also going to continue their actions, their motions as PDP Laban.
Yes, so let them look for their remedy. We are not the ones who should be looking for our remedy, because we are the status quo. They want to change. They want to change what is existing as of the moment, and then this. That's why if you want to change what is existing, there are also existing rules, and these are found in the party constitution. You just follow. You follow. You do not. Nothing should happen within the party without the knowledge and participation of the party president. The party president is the most crucial and critical officer of a political party, especially the PDP Laban under the constitution.
Even if they're just calling him the acting president.
Why are they so obsessed with the word acting? I mean, there was an automatic succession. Ganun yun eh. So, and then even if it's acting president, I mean, you change things properly. Yun ang sense. You know, that has always been my message also to Secretary Cusi.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Senator Coco Pimentel, thank you so much for joining us today. You continue to take care and keep safe, Senator.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Salamat po. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for keeping us company the whole week this week. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.